My name's Ollie Taylor and I'm here at Gloucestershire Archives with John Davis. And John has very kindly brought in a selection of photos of machinery built by Fielding and Platt. John, the photo that we're looking at now at the moment, can you describe what the machine is that's pictured in this photo, please?
Yes, this is a 350-ton vertical extrusion press that we made for a company called Johnson Matthey in Hatton Garden, London. They were precious metal dealers, etc. And it was one of the first jobs that I virtually did on my own. I think the original design had been done, but I did all the detailed drawings for it. It's a vertical press, and it's sited for testing purposes at the end of the Hydraulic One shop, and it can be identified by people who work there because there's a set of steps going up to the left-hand side of the picture that took us to a walkway over the Goat Track Railway, over to the boiler yard and the fabrication shop and the pattern shop. Anyway, the machine, a vertical extrusion press, as I said, and the gentleman at the controls was our chief designer of the day, Mr. Roy Pegler, very clever gentleman who also lectured at Gloucester Technical College. But I well remember the machine because I actually went to site just after it was installed. I think there were a few extra bits and pieces to go on, and I think the company were perhaps a little reward, I don't know, letting me go along with the acceptance engineer, a gentleman called Brian Boucher, who took me up. And I remember we got there and fitted these extra little bits and pieces and said, OK, now we'll test it. And they actually produced a heated billet of pure silver. I guess the diameter of the, just trying to think, the diameter of the billet, around about 4 inches maybe, something like that. And they extruded a silver tube. You know, it's a couple of feet long, and I can't quite remember the diameter, but I just looked at this in amazement because I just didn't know, you know, what it would have cost. Anyway, after we'd done that and everybody was pleased, they took us to lunch, and their lunch was in an old, what I would imagine would have been a first-class railway carriage, which was a one-off for me. That was it was very, very, very exciting, a very enjoyable day. And on the way home, we stopped at an hotel in High Wycombe. Of course, the motorway goes past High Wycombe now. And there was an hotel there called, oh, Godfather's, my wife will curse me if I don't remember, because I remember I had a meal there at this hotel, the Golden something. Anyway, never mind. Because I well remember it because when we were married in February 1963, we stopped on. We went to London for our honeymoon, and we stopped at that same hotel for a meal. That's about. I think that's about all I can remember about that photograph.
We'll have to get your wife on the website, John, and she can add the full name of the pub for us. But coming back to the photograph that we've got here of the press, it must have been quite unusual for a press to extrude precious metals, because we often think of extrusion presses as extruding brasses or bronzes or indeed aluminium. But to extrude a precious metal, this must have been a very rare machine.
Well, it was not really because the principles are the same. It's just it the type of billet you put into the machine. I mean, you can make from solder extrusion, for example, and maybe there are just a couple of slight different innovations, possibly. But basically, I mean, if you've got the force there, you've got a container, you've got a main cylinder, etc. So there's not a great deal of difference.
And you mentioned that it might sometimes require different innovations. Did you have to draw any of those when you were doing your detailed drawings, or was it pretty similar to normal extrusion drawings?
I seem to think that this particular machine, I think I did most of the drawings. I think I was probably working for Bob Maley at the time. It was probably kept a close eye on, but I seem to remember doing most of the press drawings. So I was quite pleased with that little baby, and to go to site and see the first extrusion coming off it was, was quite delightful.
And you mentioned Roy Pegler, who's pictured at the controls here in the photo. He's standing on a wooden bench. Why would he be doing that?
Oh, well, just for test purposes. I mean, it didn't really matter as long as he sort of got him up high enough. But at sight, it wouldn't have obviously, we wouldn't have taken a wooden bench with us to stand on. I think it was just a temporary setup. But as long as everything, like the pumps and the pre-filled tank and the press and the control panel, were all at the same relative level, it didn't really matter how it went in at the shops to for test purposes.
And thinking about the testing of presses generally at Fieldings, what was the procedure for testing them? Were they just erected and then set to run for a certain amount of time, and then they were seen to be fit for taking to the client?
Yes, they didn't. I mean, probably pumps, etc., would have been tested separately anyway. And we didn't very often extrude on site because it needed, obviously, heat to heat up the billets, etc. And so we did a kind of like a dry test, as you could call it. We did pressure testing of the cylinders, etc., to make sure that they functioned correctly and for certain periods of time. And then you compiled a kind of test report to give to the customer to say we've tested this, that, and the other.
And that was the testing procedure. Fantastic. Looking at some of the other details in the picture, you've mentioned the stairs that were on the left-hand side of the photograph that led you over to the boiler yard and to the pattern shops. On the right-hand side of the photograph, we've got a door. Where did that door lead to?
Well, there was there was a series of offices along there going from, you've seen on the picture, like the extreme left-hand one, but they... back to the right, there were quite a number of offices, and they all backed out onto the goat track. I'm not quite sure who was in this end one here. No, I can't remember. They changed from time to time, but I know slightly to the right was the works manager's office, so he could sort of keep an eye on everybody. It was probably at that time the works manager was probably Bill Meadows. There was also the planning department in one of the offices along there as well. And further to the right again was the tool stores. So that, upstairs, there was an upstairs as well. I know one of the places up there was the apprentice lecture room, but that's not shown in this picture. I'm not sure it was in the office that we can see on the first floor. They change from time to time, as I said.
And above the windows of those offices that you mentioned on the first floor looks like a kind of gantry or crane-like structure. Was that actually used for a crane?
Yes, there was. You have to be very careful here, because if a crane was in use at this end of the shop... it was nigh on impossible to go up those steps, so they used to, I think if I remember rightly, they used to put a little notice at the bottom, beware crane, and because the little box that the crane driver worked in actually overhung this stairway, and so I had to be very, very careful.
And what memories of the fitting shops at Fielding does this photo bring back for you?
Oh, the smells, the noise, everybody rushing about here, there, and everywhere. I mean, they were busy times then. God, how many people are getting on for 700 people working at a company probably at that time. This is around about 1961, 62, something like that, as I recall. Yes.
And is there anything else you'd like to mention about this photograph or the memories that it brings back for you, John?
No, I don't think so. I shall have my knuckles wrapped when I get home and can't think of the name of the hotel that we had our first meal together, having just got married. But there we are. No, I think that's all.
I'm sure Jan will forgive you. Cheers, John.